Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Ken Krause will return to Saigon in October. In 1975, he was assigned to the U.S. Embassy during what became the fall of Saigon and the final days of the Vietnam War. He talked with me about it in 2015. He was heading then to Virginia for a Marines reunion that he had organized to mark the 40th anniversary of the end of the war. South Vietnam had been a life experience that he and others found themselves working the rest of their lives to cope with.
My name's Ken Krause, and in 1975, I was a young Marine Corps Lance Corporal in Saigon. I had been recently assigned to the American Embassy as a member of the Marine Security Guard Detachment. I'd been out of high school about 2 years. I was 19 and a half, and although I had been overseas to the Far East the previous year, this was really my first experience in South Vietnam. For the Marines who served at the American Embassy in Saigon at the time of its fall, many of us can just close our eyes, and it's yesterday. I've experienced a lot over the last 40 years, coming to terms with my service in Vietnam. And I think more importantly, over the last 10 years or so, I've been really exploring how those experiences have impacted my life. And it's amazing in speaking with other Marines that I served with how so much of our lives have paralleled. But when we're together, we're still those same 19 and 20-year-old guys, just like brothers. We can share with each other virtually anything, and it's just an incredible experience. But it was all shaped over about a 30-day period in April of 1975. Joined the Marine Corps right out of high school in 1973 when I graduated from Woodland High School. 2 weeks after high school graduation, I found myself at Marine Corps Recruit Depot in San Diego, and after boot camp and infantry training school down at Camp Pendleton, I was assigned to Alpha Company, 1st Battalion, 4th Marines on Okinawa, and I spent a year on Okinawa and was to rotate off of Okinawa in November of 1974. We graduated from Embassy Guard School in mid-February of 1975, and along with about six other members of that graduating class, we were given orders to the American Embassy in Saigon. And I arrived in Saigon on or about the 27th of February, 1975, and spent the next 60 days there.
Kiss me goodbye.
The American Embassy in Saigon at the time was one of the largest embassies in the world, and there were about a dozen posts that Marines could be assigned to. Pretty much looked like a security guard. If you approached the embassy from any entrance, there was a Marine guard on those gates as well. It was really a great adventure, and quite honestly, Saigon was in denial about the fall of the rest of the country. We were very isolated. We had a Marine house that was about four blocks away. It was a six-story apartment house. We all had our own rooms. If we wanted our shoes shined, like every good Marine does, you just put them right outside the door. We had maids and people that took care of everything for us, and we stood post in our Marine Corps uniforms. Life was generally good. We had free rein when we were off post, for the most part, to do anything we wanted to in town and could go on liberty, and We enjoyed being in Saigon quite a bit. I think for each of the guys, each of the Marines that I served with, there was a trigger. This isn't gonna end well. We all knew it. We didn't all know it at the same time. Each of us came to that realization, I think, on our own, regardless of what we're being told by the embassy. For me, it was the crash of Operation Baby Lift. Baby Lift was an operation to move orphan children out of South Vietnam that came about in late March. One of the very first flights of Operation Babylift crashed. A number of babies were killed, I think a couple hundred. And that crash, to me, said, this is not going to end well. And it changed from just a fun duty spot to something a lot more serious. As the fixed-wing evacuation out at Tonsi Nut Air Base really ramped up into full production, it became obvious that there wasn't enough security out at the airport. The airport was roughly 6 kilometers from the embassy that was downtown, and so the ambassador ordered about a dozen Marines or so to be moved out there, and so that diminished our detachment by about a third. And then we jokingly referred to it as 12 on, stay on. And that's when we all went on to permanent posts, and my permanent post became the vehicle entry gate. And you could really see the emotional stress of people coming and going, because I was seeing hundreds of people a day, mostly senior State Department and other government agency people coming and going on a regular basis. There were thousands of Americans living in Saigon and in South Vietnam at the time. You could live there very cheap. Food was good. The weather was nice. So there were thousands of Americans. And then I think that at some point people realized this is getting ugly. We got to get out. And so they would come to the consulate to get their exit paperwork done. If you're an American, show up with your American passport and away you go. But for a lot of Americans, they had very deep ties to the Vietnamese community, whether they were family and others, and so they were trying to get out maybe a dozen or 20 people. Because the ambassador was in such denial, finally senior representatives pretty much took matters in their own hands, and there was a lot of makeshift movement of dozens of people at a time, some with permission and a lot without. Towards the beginning of the last week, and I forget exactly where the dates were, but certainly within the last 10 days, there was a South Vietnamese Air Force pilot who took a fighter jet and attacked the presidential palace with it. He bombed the presidential palace, and that was 4 blocks from the embassy. But that happened. That was one of the big events. And then there was another rocket attack that hit the downtown area a couple days before the evacuation started. I think it was one of the last nights that we were actually in the Marine House. But I had a room up on the 6th floor of the Marine House. And the rockets landed close enough that the concussion was such that it blew my bedroom door off its hinges and into the room. And it was more one of those senses of looking around going, what the heck's happening? I think the first thing I knew that the evacuation was taking place was when the first helicopters landed. I think that we had been told, I don't recall the specifics, but I'm pretty sure that in the morning of the 29th of April, the word must have been passed at some point, hey, the evacuation's taking place and the helicopter's lifting off in a couple hours. There were hundreds and then became thousands of Vietnamese who were at risk. These were people that worked for the Americans and would be sent to prison or worse if they were captured by the North Vietnamese. And with the CH-53s coming in and the 46s up on the roof, we had to coordinate individual airlifts. And once it got started, the Marines there at the embassy, and I'm sure the Marines out at the airport, just did everything in their power to provide safety to the people that were evacuating. And we did it one helicopter at a time, one family at a time, one group of people at a time. And we just did it until finally the word came down from Washington, from President Ford, that it would be only Americans from then on because of the how long the evacuation had taken place. Sh- shortly before midnight in the middle of the evacuation, there was a Marine helicopter that crashed at sea, taking the lives of two pilots, the loss of a 46. Their bodies were never recovered. That helicopter went to the bottom of the South China Sea. Finally, it got to the point where President Ford had to make a decision and said no more. He ordered the end of the evacuation. The helicopter came in and took Ambassador Martin off of the embassy property at about 4 in the morning. After the ambassador left, shortly before 5 in the morning, we were told to come off of the walls and off the roofs of the buildings where we had been transitioning people into their helicopter teams and then collapsed into the embassy itself and then secured the embassy. And then we made our way to the roof. And so we got up there shortly before daybreak. Initially, there wasn't, I don't think, a lot of sense of dread or worry. We were Marines, and we knew that there were Marine helicopters out there, and we knew they'd come get us. I never had a doubt that we would be left. That was never a concern. Plus, as a young Marine, I was surrounded by some really good NCOs, some really good corporals and sergeants. And my commanding officer was there, Jim Keane, and my NCOIC, John Valdez, and Mike Sullivan. But as the sky got light, we looked over the walls of the embassy and realized there were still about 400 people down in the parking lot who had expected to get out, who had been told they would get out, and they weren't going to get out. Several of them were members of our Mission Warden Fire Department who had voluntarily stayed behind to keep the parking lot helicopter zone watered down to prevent dust, and we left them there. At one point, they hot-wired one of the fire trucks and drove it right through the front door of the embassy. They got all the way up to a door leading onto the roof of the embassy. So this was a stairwell that was roughly maybe 12 feet long, leading up to the roof, real narrow, two people wide type of thing, just a series of stairs. And if they had gotten through the door, they'd be on the roof with us. And we couldn't let that happen. We pushed wall lockers and everything up else against the door so that they couldn't get in, and then flooded the stairwell with tear gas. Looking through that window, there were dozens of people in the stairwell, and yet you couldn't see 5 or 6 feet down the stairwell because of how thick the tear gas was. And in desperation, they stayed there hoping that they would get out with us, and they didn't. Once the evacuation finished, about 7:58, there's pictures that Jim Lurie and newsmen from NBC made their way up as well and have documented the dozens of people who then sat on top of the roof thinking that there would be other helicopters to come and get them later that morning. And about 10 o'clock in the morning, the NVA tanks drove by the embassy and they were still up there waiting for helicopters that wouldn't come. When I left the roof of the embassy, there were 11 Marines left still behind me. There'd be one more helicopter. In an interesting case of fate, the helicopter that evacuated the American ambassador, Graham Martin, made one more trip back to the embassy. Lady A-09 came back, and I ended up on it and was evacuated out to the Duluth. I evacuated off the roof of the embassy around 7:30 in the morning on April 30th, and then it would be about 7:58 before the last 11 Marines lifted off in Swift 2-2. I still couldn't believe it was happening. It was more like being in a movie, a three-dimensional movie, and just looking around and going, I can't believe this really happening. I can remember looking out the helicopter's windows as we're lifting off and being able to see the diesel plumes of the NVA tanks some of the pictures I have are actually taking on the Blue Ridge. And there's pictures of guys that you'd think they're just dancing a jig at, you know, some Irish festival. They're just, we were wearing the clothes we'd been wearing for a couple weeks. We probably smelled like it, and we were just glad to be safe. And I don't think the reality of everything that took place really sunk in for quite some time. Would be 15 years before I ever talked to one of the Marines again. It's just how the assignments went, and that's just kind of how things were dealt with in the day. But when I first started getting back together with the guys, it was still a brotherhood. I'm okay that it still affects me. And it's only been in the last few years that I can get all the way through a small speech at Marshalltown High School without having to pause. And for a lot of the guys, it's the same way. I think we still carry a strong sense of loss. The fact remains that we were the last Marines to serve there. We're the Marines that pulled down that flag and gave it to the ambassador, and he took it and left the country.
Ken Krause, a young Marine during the fall of Saigon. He told us his story in April of 2015. We've posted a link to a powerful series from that year by Boston's NPR station, WBUR. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.